How to have fun anytime, anywhere. Step one, go to ChumbaCasino.com.
ChumbaCasino.com. Got it.
Step two, collect your welcome bonus.
Come to Papa, welcome bonus.
Step three, play hundreds of casino-style games for free.
That's a lot of games, all for free.
Step four, unleash your excitement.
Woohoo!
Chumba Casino has been delivering thrills for over a decade. So claim your free welcome bonus now and live the Chumba life. Visit ChumbaCasino.com.
Terms and conditions apply. Now, have you ever wanted to play a podcast with me in my Time Crisis 2 costume and Einel in his Horrible Histories getup? Well, if you flick to the back pages of the Press X to Continue magazine, you're going to find a whole host of cheat codes in there, right? And what you're going to do is you're going to go through those cheat codes and they're going to have an impact on how you can watch and listen. Different outfits, we'll have different voices, Einel. Maybe there's a zero-G mode. Maybe we'll do that old one from GoldenEye with the huge heads.
Oh, yeah, big head mode. Yeah, DK mode.
Yeah, that was it. DK mode. We can do that. My name is Stefan Powell. This is Einel Tomlinson. And we are here, as ever, bringing you some more press sticks to continue. You well, Einel?
Yeah, I'm really well. You know what? You just got me hankering for cheats again. I used to love cheat books. I used to have an Action Replay that there was like Game Genie and Action Replay, where it was little peripheral you put into your machine and then you put the cart on top of it, just unlocked a whole bunch of different cheats for games unofficially, and it was amazing.
Yeah, bring back cheats and games, I say. Well, talking about bringing things back, James Briefel is back with us from Pulp Kitchen, the presenter and podcast. Hello, James. How's it going? How's your week been?
Yeah, it's been good. Thank you for having me back. Bring cheats back. Mm. Is it just GTA that does cheats? Is it literally been since GTA 5
that
we've had a mainstream cheats game?
Yeah, well, The Sims had good cheats, didn't it? And Glenn Moore, the king of the XC Beasts, Press X Orgia, the comedian, presenter of Button Boys podcast, is with us again. It was The Sims was a big one for cheats.
Rosebud was the horses. I was thinking this about cheat codes the other day and how they don't really seem as prevalent as they used to be. And then I played a game called Arcade Paradise, a first person game it's a management game where you are running an illicit arcade. Basically, arcade cabinet, running a games arcade out the back of a laundrette. Mm-hmm. And so you're trying to play these games on the arcade cabinet, saving up enough money to buy more arcade cabinets, while all the while trying to run your laundrette. And running the laundrette is a bit arduous, but there is a cheat code you can input at this. It's like the Konami code. It's the up, down, left, right, ABA, but you know that one. And it means all your washing machines are gold plated and give you more money. And I couldn't believe it. I hadn't encountered a cheat code in so, so long.
That is great. Producer Dave's been on to say that on Theme Hospital, the receptionist, if you ever cheated, would announce over the tannoy, the hospital administrator is cheating, which is so good. Also, we did this the other day. We really want, if anybody knows how we can get her, I think she's on Cameo. If we Google this, we could probably figure it out. But why Google it? Well, you can ask people to listen
ask
to your podcast.
Ask the community, man.
If anybody knows how we can get hold of the actor who plays the receptionist, the voiceover in Theme Hospital, let us know. Because she does nights out in pubs where she sits in the corner reading out all the old Theme Hospital silly things, which is so funny. I'd love her to come in and introduce the podcast one.
I'd love her to do me a voice mail. Answering machine message. That'd be great.
Yeah, nice.
That would be so good.
Deep cut.
Right, so we start, as ever, with an unsung hero game. Oh. Glenn took us to Fort Solace last week. James, it is up to you this week for an unsung hero game. What are you choosing, please, and why?
Okay, so my unsung hero game is a game I've sort of done a bit of a 180/360, I forget which one it is, on. My unsung hero game is Heavy Rain, okay? Now, hear me out. Large parts of Heavy Rain, I think, have aged like a pot of cottage cheese that's been left out in the sun. But I really do fundamentally think the game got some really good things right. And I think it got sort of like memed and ridiculed, rightfully so, for some really strange acting design. It's made by Quantic Dream, who I think are a French developer. And it's set in the US, but it feels like it's been made by people who've never actually been to America. Like when you play the game, it's set in America, but like none of it feels American. And at the time it was like, oh, David Cage, he's the head of Quantic Dream. He's like this French author who talks about emotion in games and how can we leverage technology to do it. And I replayed this game in lockdown, weirdly enough, because somebody reminded me of Heavy Rain. I was like, oh my God, it's such a good time playing Heavy Rain. And I replayed it, and everything I just said about it aging really badly is definitely true. But the game still slaps. The story's fantastic. I loved all of the four, weird as they were, the four characters that you get to play as. And the quick time events nature of the game, I think a quick time event is really frustrating in most action games where you play normally for most of the game and all of a sudden it's like, now press triangle to do this. But when I think the game doubles down on being like, this is how we're going to do our chase scenes, our fight scenes, or basically everything, for me it just really worked and it was really riveting. And every time I had a chase or someone was trying to kill me or I had to go and catch someone, I found all the quick time events really riveting and I'm like, I think this action scene works, I think this chase scene works. I forgot so many elements of the story and it took me back to when I played it. I think about 2010, so I was about 15 and I think I beat it in maybe like four or five sittings. I remember being at school at the time and every single day I would just think, I can't wait to go back home so I can play the next few chapters of Heavy Rain. It has a sort of really dark, obvious, like pathetic fallacy of the whole like Heavy Rain thing is what makes the time of when the person's gonna die. And it sort of like is an homage to like films, like this is a compliment of like David Fincher films or like things like Girl with the Dragon Tattoo, Zodiac. Like it was dark and haunting and sad. But I think because it got so ridiculed in the Jason meme and like some very strange accents, I just want to remind people that I think Heavy Rain is a really, really solid, solid, solid game. I think it gets a bad rap.
You will not believe what game I am currently playing.
No way.
Shut no way. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Jason. I'm playing it for, so we're playing it for Button Boys at the moment.
No and, way. Oh, fantastic.
Because I was like, what a great game to revisit because it would be the third time I've played it. I played it again in, I replayed it in lockdown and I played it years and years ago because a friend of mine when I was at uni was like, you've got to check this game out. It was revolutionary because he was like, and it was also a great game to introduce people who would normally turn their noses up at games.
Yeah.
At this, because he said he would just, it was a game where you could pass the controller around, right? Whenever it's the private investigator you play, whenever it's Jason's dad, this person.
Oh,
plays.
I like that.
And the thing is, I find this with a lot of super massive games as well, with people who made like Until Dawn.
Yeah.
Their most recent one, Directive 8020, with Lashana Lynch, I thought was quite a bad game. But it's undeniably thrilling. And Heavy Rain, despite being absolutely hilarious, is by its nature such a thrill to play because it is tense. And people's lives are in your hands. And the worst thing is, it's that you don't get a game over state. It's that, no, the game will carry on regardless of your bad decisions and you've got to sit with those.
Which makes the stakes of quick time events really intense. That's why your heart starts beating when you're doing it,
I think my controversial take is I think Detroit Become Human is a masterpiece. And I think that was their best one. And I I'm too scared to replay it because I'm worried I'm going to be like, oh, this is heavy-handed. Yeah. But Heavy Rain, it's like, the fact that the cast recorded their lines like in alphabetical order or whatever it was is such a funny... It's such a funny...
Is that how they recorded it?
I did not know that.
Context. The game controls really weirdly as well. It's like you the left stick, it sort of dictates where you look and how you think, and you press R2, I think, to actually move forward. And the camera is, I think, fixed most of the time. And then L2 is like to cycle your thoughts, which sort of revolve around your brain, and you can play all the different thoughts. And Ethan will be like, I'd better check the fridge before my wife comes home. Or why don't I go do some work before the kids get back? And it's sort of like, it's really strange when you first start, but you actually get really into like hearing all of the different thoughts. But it kind of felt like playing a game for the first time when you go and play it, because it's just so strange. And it's like the people who made it weren't playing or developing games before. They were like, let's just reset how anyone does a video game and just pretend that all the innovations in game design didn't really exist. We're going to sort of do it like this and see what happens. And this is actually, it gets away with it a surprising amount.
Really made me want to go and play Heavy Rain and or Detroit Become Human again. I can remember when Detroit Human Became Human came out, I was like, this looks, I mean, it just felt so, and to play it felt so engrossing. I'm into it. I think it's because
PlayStation had backed it harder because I think they published both of them. And so they put so much momentum behind it. It was one of those games that if you didn't have a PS3 when it came out, you wanted a PS3 to experience that game. It was like, oh, whoa.
And graphically for the time, I think it looked, I remember seeing it in the PS3 generation thinking this looks fantastic in the rain specifically. And I think it almost is part of that early resurgence where Sony really became known for like prioritizing narrative, the types of story that would hold up almost in a great limited series or a film. And obviously they've totally run with that now with like, you know, the reboot of God of War, The Last of Us, what Uncharted, anything Naughty Dog does now. But you can really look at what Heavy Rain was doing in 2010 and being like, you can see them really sort of like borrowing from the film world and getting people talking and analyzing stories of games in a way that was different.
Mm. And great box art. Let's cut to the chase. Yeah. Crack it out. Origami Killer. The rain.
Bit of blood
screen,
in the corner of it.
Bit of blood in the corner of it. Business. Very good. Good show. Heavy Rain is on our unsung hero list. I could add to it. However, luckily for us, DW, in one of our brilliant mods in the Discord, has made a big list for us. And so he's going to add to that. So that is very good stuff. Now, COVID has been on, suggesting their unsung hero game, saying, I have a semi-unknown hero game that I haven't heard, and their words, not mine, a quiet fart about for at least 2 decades. EverQuest, or EverCrack as it was known, was the origin of all modern massively multiplayer online role-playing games that shaped the environment for the majority of the noughties, also ensured that an entire generation of young people learned to survive without showering for significant periods of time. Well, that bit we can bin that bit off. But yeah, EverQuest, because everybody always thinks about World of Warcraft, don't they, Inel? But there was a real sort of bun fight for the MMO RPG crown in that early noughties period. There was that City of Heroes one. There was a bunch of different fantasy ones. And EverQuest is one that we should remember since COVID.
Well, EverQuest was the one that they all tried to copy. I think it was like World of Warcraft saw like EverQuest had like, oh, they've got this many subscribers. Well, when we release, we want this many. They had the crown and everybody was coming for it. But like, I don't know about unsung. Haven't we got a new one coming out like this month, like for the Switch and PlayStation?
No, that's a good point.
I'm pretty certain. Hold on, let me do a quick Google. I'm pretty certain there's like a new one.
I think maybe it isn't given the... It's not talked about as much. Like
It's not talked about as much as
not
World
as
of
much
Warcraft,
as World of Warcraft.
Sure.
And it was like, at the time, friends of yours who had a stable enough PC and internet connection to be able to play it were the envy of everyone else at school.
That's the thing. You had to have the big PC for it.
One of the most enticing ideas for a game I think there could ever be is the MMO. The idea of an RPG, a Lord of the Rings, but everyone I see is also someone who's playing it at home, is just like a concept that a five-year-old version of you would dream up and be like, that's what I would pray where technology would eventually lead us. So it is strange, but it did kind of fall off.
The online MMO really made games sort of like way before their time feel so much more alive because the people in it were alive. Like that buzz of seeing a bunch of other people moving in an awkward way with text flying around their heads. It just injected everything with a sort of like, oh my God, like this is happening. I'm in a sort of feels like a real digital space that creates a sense of urgency when you log in versus just like pausing any game that's all just NPC based. You just have a different relationship with it fundamentally.
I get all of that, but like, there's like EverQuest creators that are so huge still. And if you go on like YouTube communities or stuff like that, I met a guy at a gaming event a few weeks back. All he plays is EverQuest. That's all he's ever done.
The issue is, I'm not someone who has ever played I played RuneScape and that was kind of it. And so it's probably wrong of me to give my opinion on this when it's like if I'd had a passing interest in football 5 years ago and then hadn't watched any football since and was saying stuff like, what happened to that Jude Bellingham? You know, I know I'm the wrong person to talk about this, but I feel like outside of the MMO community, it's not one that it's like the public's go-to reference point for an MMO. Do you know what I mean? It doesn't have a cultural footprint.
Yeah.
Of World of Warcraft.
Because and you can go and watch this. We went to the studio that makes RuneScape and had a bit of behind the scenes as they sort of set out their year ahead not so long ago. RuneScape seems to get a bit more pop than perhaps EverQuest does. Actually, producer David's been on. Thank you very much, Dave. EverQuest Legends is likely to be out actually by the time people are listening to this, Einel. So you're right. There is. So I think Einel's issue here, Corvin, is not your choice. This is a very good choice, but whether or not it is unsung or not. But you know what? We should do like an MMO deep dive sometime because it is.
Jesus, you got time for that?
No, not playing it. Absolutely. I loved my time with World of Warcraft back in the uni days. I've been there. But there is something about why. I thought that genre was that was it. That was the zenith. That was going to be peak gaming, and everything was going to be there.
I think we could all remember the first time we played online and we typed something in a keyboard and someone replied to us in a game world. I was like,
yeah.
I don't know if this already exists, but the type of MMO I wish existed would be that your character can only walk and move like you're in a Naughty Dog game or a walking sim. Because the thing that took me out of Elder Scrolls Online, for instance, was seeing everyone zipping and jumping all over the place and running into walls, and you go, I need you all to act for me, if that's okay. Sorry,
you're breaking my fantasy.
I can do whatever I want, but unfortunately you can't. Yeah, exactly. Yeah, that's the issue.
But do you need to play on one of those role play servers where everybody is playing as a cat? You know, they're getting into it a bit more, a bit like with GTA.
Yeah.
Well, now that I know it exists, you've ruined my life. So
I reckon Glenn would be great at GTA RP, man. I reckon he'd be wicked at that.
Oh, I'd love to do that. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, well, when GTA 6 RP eventually ends up being...
I'll be serving your food in Clucking Bell.
Yeah, you just will. Away. Yeah, yeah.
And then selling mixtapes on the side.
Press X to Continue is proudly sponsored by you. That is right. If you want more Press X content, then hop over to our socials and see how you can support us and see how you can help us keep the content coming out. You can access live streams, bonus episodes, behind the scenes content, and even, if you're feeling fancy, some Press X to Continue merch. Before we get into this week's trivia, Glenn, we haven't asked you, what is your target for how many games you're going to play this year? Have you set one, or are you going back from that?
For anyone new to the podcast, in lockdown, it was like the first time I'd ever really been able to play games for more hours per day than I had done previously, and I got to about October that year and realized I'd reached the end credits in about 85 games and was like, well, let's see if I can do 100. Then in 2021 I was like, because I was Twitch streaming, I was like, well, let's do 101, and then the following year 102, and then when I started on my own gaming podcast, I was like, well, now I have a financial incentive to keep this going. So it should be 106 because it's 2026. Jeez. However, at the time of recording, I'm already on 89. But to be clear, a lot of these this year, for the first time, I've explored loads of very small Steam titles that go on for half an hour, 45 minutes. Really short. That's not what I've been focusing on. And don't get me wrong, in amongst those has been like Final Fantasy VIII and Dragon Quest VII Reimagined, like a couple of meaty RPGs. But for every game that's longer than 10, 15 hours, there has been like a 2-hour walking sim or whatever, or a 1-hour puzzler. Yeah. So it's, I think at this rate, if I continued, I could probably do 150, but I want to, when I'm at the Edinburgh Festival in the month of August, and I'm living alone and I've just got all that time, I do want to tackle something like Crimson Desert, which isn't my type of game, but has been so part of the conversation this year that I want to have experienced it. So that will take me like a full month, and that'll bring the ratio right down, I think.
Yeah, it's like you're on a quest to complete Steam or complete PlayStation or complete Xbox.
If that was a possibility, I probably would persevere. Yeah. Like, I'd probably be like, let's just get it done. And you can, I think I like being able to talk about any game that's sort of thrown my way. It's just a but at the same time, it means, and the more games you discover, the more genres you discover and more niches you discover that then make you go, oh, I want to try and find more of that. And then it opens up new worlds of, oh my God, there's 10 games just like it. And then it just spirals. It's just,
I'm lucky to see like just over 100 films in a year, but like games are a lot longer than films most of the time.
The problem is
films, that to shame.
It's also, bear in mind, if I'm going to a podcast, the podcast studio that I go to every week is an hour and a half there on the tube, hour and a half back. It's like one of the longest tube journeys you do.
Handheld.
Yeah, I've done barely any sitting down playing PS5 this year on the sofa. Very little of that. It's all been switched to. That's been like the console of choice, and it never would have been in previous years.
I've had a Steam Deck OLED for the last year, totally re-fallen in love with handheld gaming, playing on planes, which you always could do, but just the big intentionality of it. It's just so good. I want a PlayStation handheld.
It's the quality of the games as well. Like Switch 2 has finally almost reached the Steam Deck in terms of the idea of playing something like Pragmata, like a new AAA or Resident Evil Requiem, a huge budget release, and it looks just like it does on an Xbox or a PlayStation, but it's just shrunk down. Would you recommend the Steam Deck?
I really do. I think like so just like in terms of like the wow factor. So like I'm replaying the whatever the PC remaster they did of Red Dead Redemption 1 on my Steam Deck right now, which if you had told, 15, 16 year old James that you could play what felt like the biggest, most amazing game in the world literally in your hands, I would have told you, to F off, that's not possible. The computers will never be so fast. And that novelty I don't think ever wears off. The handheld itself is quite large, which I think generally leans itself more towards a sort of like slightly more hardcore gamer than somebody who I think would pick up a Switch, which is a bit smaller, or somebody who would game on a phone, or like it's a very different proposition to like the PSP DS that we had back then. I think the fact that you can play almost any game scaled down is phenomenal. I think it's much better at enjoying, PS4 and PS3 games than it is PS5, for example, that sort of generation era games. You can get away with some of them, but I would never expect that console to be able to do it well. But like as a gameplay experience, I think SteamOS is great. I think just like being able to have that amount of power in your hands or in your backpack is fantastic. I think it's a shame now that because of the issues with the price, I can't recommend now based on everything that's going on that anyone should be buying any tech hardware, which is a huge shame. But for me, I got it at a price.
Because what is it? Nearly a grand now, I know, right?
Which is crazy. It's really concerning what's happening. Obviously, 3 years like ago,
buy a Steam Deck now. Don't touch them. Don't touch them.
Right. Okay. It is now time for some trivia. Last week we didn't get on very well, so let's see how we do this week. Johnny VR has been on in our Discord channel, which is all about the gaming questions. You can stick them in there. Our producers will turn them into a question for us to answer here on the podcast. And the question this week from Johnny VR is this:
who wants to be a continuer?
According to its creators, by 2018, which single-player offline game had 270 million monthly plays? According to its creators, by 2018, which single-player offline game had 270 monthly plays? 270 million monthly plays. Yeah, of course you can. I mean, you can stick it. We'll answer properly at the end of the pod, but what are you thinking?
Is it Minecraft? I know there is an online component to it, but just like offline people playing Minecraft? Across mobile, iPad, console, PC.
Yeah, Minecraft is one of the biggies for sure.
It's on every platform. It's the biggest game.
Offline game, I'd turn it.
Or FC 25 for FIFA football or whatever.
Yeah. Do they count games that have an online component but not compulsory online component as offline as well? So FIFA for instance.
The game has no online component.
No. Okay. I would have said, because it came out in 2018, either Red Dead Redemption 2 or to a lesser extent God of War, but you said by 2018, which implies it came out before then. So I'm going to say Skyrim.
Skyrim is
good. It's the total number of people who have played it.
Monthly.
So still playing. And in 2018,
yeah, it's a lot, isn't it?
270 million is really high. Like,
so even for so it's not necessarily 270.
That's one in 28 people in the world, I think.
No, that's not. Yeah, it's not exactly. It's not individual people. It's plays. So how many times? So somebody might have taken up 100 million of them.
I'm sticking with Skyrim.
It must be Candy Crush.
Yeah. Oh, fuck. Of course. Be Candy
Crush. Thinking mobile now.
Must be Candy Crush.
I think it's going to be a mobile one. Well, look, we will come back to the answer. It's a great question, Johnny. Thank you very much. You can do the same if you want to sort of try and perplex us and our guests. Then get in the Discord. There's a secret channel there. Put your questions in. Me and Einar can't see it, which we're fine with. Now, the leaderboard currently stands because, yes, Andy Noah's done his amazing maths to the algorithm. Keza McDonald is still number one. She should be. She's the Guardian's games editor. Imogen Miller is in second. I am in third. Einel is in fourth. And Glenn and James currently are down in 18th. But you're tied with Marcus Bronzy, Sam Korn fourth, Wee Claire, Cyborg Angels down there, Suze Kempner's down there, Lewis Edridge is down there.
Respectable group.
Yeah, Tom Rose. People know their stuff.
It's a party down there.
Yeah. Wee Claire's down there. So it is a party in 18.
Yeah, do you know what I feel like?
WhatsApp group.
This feels like, I think this is the place to be. This is like in Titanic when Jack says to Rose, do you want to see a real party? And when they go down to the steerage deck, and it's so much more banging than the Silver Service restaurant.
No points, no problems.
Quite. Nobody. Keza's having a lovely time on the top there, but is she having a party with lots of other people? Yeah.
She's having caviar. Everyone's got high expectations of her. She can't enjoy herself.
Now, Pokemon Go has just had its 10th anniversary. Loads of people took to the streets during the heat wave recently to take on raids, to do the Pokestops thing, catch Pokemon. I can't believe I know it's been 10 years. I am so old. Yeah. Oh my God. 10 years of Pokemon Go. I can't quite believe, because loads of other ones have tried. There was a Harry Potter one. There was a Monster Hunter one. They've tried loads of different ones. None of them have stuck like the Pokemon one.
No, it's astounding. I'll have to say, I'll give it the props, because I played it when it first came out and then I fell off it hard. And then there was like a big boom. That like everybody, do you remember the viral videos of people running in the park to try and catch spawns, like people in like Central Park in New York and like Hyde Park in London, everyone's rushing to kind of let the spawns over there grab those Pokemon. Those days are gone, but it's still been really, really successful to the point where a lot of my friends, even my partner, still play it like every day. It encourages a lot of people to kind of get outside and just go for walks. The community is really good. There's like, I know they have community meetups on like weekly basis in a lot of countries, especially in a lot of cities. There's a lot of people that kind of get together and community organizers, and what Niantic have done, they've been really clever. They've kind of united with some of the communities to give them special things, special spawns. So it encourages people to come out and play together. And that's how they've kind of been able to sustain the game. I know it's bringing in billions, sorry. It's super successful for a free-to-play game. It's what all of them want.
Yeah, it became a thing in and of itself, Glenn. Mm. It didn't necessarily change. I think at the time, I can remember doing loads on it when I was, as a video games reporter at the time, people were saying, oh, this is going to change how people play games. This is the future. It isn't that, but it's still mega successful in and of its own right.
Yeah, and also the first example of it was the best example. If someone said to you, like, okay, how about an idea for a game where you move your phone around and you see stuff on the screen? Pokemon is the best possible version of that. It is one of the greatest ideas in gaming of all time. And in 2016, I remember like leaving gigs like late at night and just seeing people bunched around on a street corner like they were on spice, like just like almost catatonic.
Flicking balls.
And it was incredible. I mean, it sort of got, I think the moment it sharply went downhill was when Hillary Clinton made that really shit joke of Pokemon go to the polls. And everyone was like, oh, it's not fun now. Now that a politician's mentioned it, it's not fun, is it? It's amazing that it's still going. And I think it's good because every new generation of Pokemon fans there are, they're experiencing it for the first time. Pokemon's never going away. I'm surprised there's not more. In terms of augmented reality, there's not more in the horror space, you know, of having games where there's spooky stuff in your own home that will show up on your phone. Mm-hmm. Like, I'm surprised that's the direction it hasn't more clearly gone in, even though there are examples of that. I was thinking the only other really successful place you can take it, like, obviously you can do similar stuff to Pokemon, like, as you said, Monster Hunter Wilds. But in terms of change of genre, the only other success you could really have is in the horror space. And I'm surprised that hasn't really gone that way.
Yeah, I thought we'd see more board games use this sort of tech, James, you know, like, and there might be some examples I've not come across anywhere. There is a physical and a digital sort of element to it, because like Glenn says, if you're gonna go out and catch stuff on your phone, Pokemon, it's the best, right?
Just like the novelty of a game taking you on your feet and walking. And I think like gaming outside of the odd, you know, convention, it so often is a culture that takes place at home, in living rooms, in bedrooms. And yes, there's an online component to it, but largely people aren't that much out and about. And I think it was such this incredible cultural moment back in the day where I felt like the passion of gaming itself was just wonderfully unleashed onto the streets worldwide. And as you said, like people gathering together to go and do stuff that just, it didn't really feel like it had ever been done before. And it's a testament to the legacy and the strength of Pokemon as an IP, that it has had all these distinctive waves and took the sort of the fantasy you had when you played Pokemon Blue back in the day, but made it feel like you could go and do that in the streets of your own city. It's just like, it's so obvious. It's almost crazy. It hadn't been thought of before. And it was like a perfect storm of tech and games all sort of meeting at the right time to make something really special.
We've had quite a lot of conversations on the podcast over the years, Anil, about Pokemon games actually, and sort of maybe not having the impact now as they used to. If it wasn't for Pokemon Go, you could argue that like some of the recent mainline releases of Pokemon have disappointed, shall we say. And like Pokemon Go has been the one thing that people seemingly keep loving and keep wanting to play more of.
Yes. No, I thought like, oh, people, like, after like the huge hype and like all the mainstream coverage of it, it would die down, and it hasn't. I think for most of us that don't play it, it's one of those things like, oh yeah, that's still a thing. Whereas to the communities, it's a huge thing and growing and growing and growing. There's like, if you go on to like YouTube or any like content creation site, just type in Pokemon Go. There's hundreds of dedicated Pokemon Go like YouTubers, TikTokers that all they do is go out and they play it. They show their local spawns, what's spawning there, what like events are happening in that region. Some of them fly across the world to say, oh, now I'm in Japan, da 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 da, I'm doing it here. Now I'm in Singapore doing it here, da 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 da. And it's a rabbit hole to go down if you want to go down it. And it makes me realize, oh yes, Pokemon is incredibly powerful as an IP, as you said, Steph. How could I forget?
Can you finish it? Has anyone ever just got the whole compendium, or do they just keep updating it?
No, there's like special ones you can get. So like you can get the normal ones, then there's like shiny ones, then there's special event ones, then there's ones that only spawn in certain territories, so you have to go abroad for them or take part in like a special event day to get it. And so it's one of those things where I could either go to South Africa and get this one, or
I think that's
choosing the holiday for this year.
Yeah, I was thinking basically South Africa, babe. What do you think?
I think that makes people bounce off it, because if like when you were a kid and you had like a Panini sticker album for like the World Cup or whatever, and if the excitement was the possibility of, well, like getting a new one and filling out the whole thing. And if someone said to you, oh, no, sorry, to get the French team, you need to buy the stickers in France. You'd go, well, fuck no. Like,
you'd think that. But it bothered me when I was a kid. It brings them back out.
Don't get me wrong. People are going to be let in by that. But that's rich people. You know, like, it closed off to so many people. I was put off by Pokemon as a kid when I heard that. I mean, it might have been an urban legend, but people were like, oh, there's certain cards that can only be won like at tournaments. And you go, no, I wanted the possibility that when I buy a pack, there could be every single one I need. Mm-hmm. Like any of the Pokemon
games. I know exactly what you mean, but it's always worked for Pokemon. I remember the original one, you could get 150, but if you wanted 151, if you wanted the Mew, you could either go to the Pokemon tournaments, or you had to go to a dedicated shop that had a dedicated machine and download it to your cart. People did it.
Yeah. it's been an amazing story. And what happens next with the next 10 years of Pokemon, I think is fascinating. Because I think we've got a like Pokemon encyclopedia here, because my son's getting into it. You know, he got all his stars one week, and the thing he wanted most was a toy Butterfree. So, okay, good. have yourself a toy Butterfree, Joseph. Go for it. I just think, like, it is the bad it, because these things have got so big and so big and so big, there's so many of them now. I think they become devalued. There is a scarcity, I think, is actually a good thing, a limited amount of, just keep adding more and more stuff, then it loses its...
It's done well.
Yeah, I think, well, I don't know if it's like lost that sort of mystique then, isn't it? So I'm interesting to see what they do over the next 10 years. But yeah, I mean, not surprised. It doesn't surprise me when I still see people out there catching their Pokemon, 10 years of Pokemon Go. Now, if you're, of course, enjoying the podcast, every episode is someone's first episode. If you like what you're listening what you've heard so far this week. We're really having a lovely time making Press X to Continue, and we'd love to keep on doing it. So if you want to come and support the team behind the scenes that make it all happen, then you can come and join our Patreon on there. There's loads more stuff you can get from us. There's top 5 episodes every month. There are live streams which test Einel and myself's near 10-year relationship to the max every month, and access to lots of different and new and exciting stuff over there. If you can't make that investment, that's fine. Nothing's going to change here. Every Tuesday is going to be new episodes for you. But we would love it if you came and join us on the Patreon.
Before you continue, Steph, producer David has just sent me his Pokédex.
Oh, has he?
He's got a lot.
Flexing.
He's got a lot, you know.
Has he? Big flex from Dave.
897 court.
Whoa.
Damn.
Wow.
Damn.
So you've got all the Kanto ones. All the Johto ones. All the Hoenn, or nearly all the Hoenn ones. Oh, well done, Dave.
This is crazy. Yeah. This is so comprehensive.
That is good, but good work.
This is what I mean. It's like, I would think, like you, Glenn, I'd think it would put people off. It doesn't.
Yeah.
Like, it's what attracts people, if anything. It's what attracts them.
Now, Glenn, you're going to review a title for us. What have you been playing?
I've been playing The Incident at Galley House. This is a game I've been playing on Steam, but if you're not a PC player, don't worry. Neither am I. This could be played on even the most basic of laptops. This game came out on the 14th of July, and it is essentially a remade version of a game called Type Help, which really took off on itch. And what's been nice is it's been sort of like... people got interested in it and they've decided to sort of build it up properly. And it's a deduction game. It's a crime deduction game. If you like stuff like Obra Dinn or The Root Trees Are Dead or Case of the Golden Idol, this will be so fully up your street. The idea is this follows someone who has arrived at a mansion called Galley House, and a bunch of people died there, and you are trying to work out what happened on this one evening. And the way you do that, the whole game is just played on this one sort of interface, is you have this strange Morse code looking machine that has a dial that you can dial on certain numbers, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, whatever. And then a keyboard in which you can type in 2-letter codes. Mm-hmm. And then another thing where you can put in numbers. And then it's got a big lever that you turn. And the way it works is you sort of have access to the past, and you can see what happened at Galley House on this fateful night where a bunch of people died. And the way it works is you can watch vignettes of what happened. So you can be like, okay, I want to see what happened when the first guest arrived. And the game will just show you a scene of silhouettes. You can't see the people. You're just listening to them. And you'll hear the conversations they had. And you're using your notepad to sort of fill in, okay, right, so that's a male. Person number one is male. They've used the word sir, so I'm assuming they work for the person they're talking to, that sort of thing. And gradually, someone will be referred to as like Mrs. Jenkins. And you go, great, okay, so now her surname is Jenkins. I'm trying to work out what her name is. And like Obra Dinn, you are filling out the identities of these people. So the way this weird machine works is you go, okay, I want to know what happened at 8 p.m. in the lobby. And I think these 4 people were there, and you type those people in, and then the machine will just show you this vignette, and it will show you these 4 people talking. And then it's all, you just listen so carefully to all this information. It's not a visual game at all. It's all about listening and making notes, because someone might be like, right, you know what? I'm going to meet Mr. Thomas in, I'm going to go meet Mr. Thomas in the study. So you're great. Right. Next thing I know, I want to move the dial to 9 p.m. study Mr. Thomas and this person. And then you sort of fill out the board from there. It's a real notepad and pen mystery game. And it is so up my street. I love working with like this old fashioned, weird combination of like brand new futuristic technology that allows you to see into the past, but it's also manual and archaic and pulling a lever to get it working. There's a great game that came out at the beginning of this year called TR49. It was made by Inkle, who made like Overboard and Expelled, and that was going through a sort of like a library archive and trying to sort of work out people's identities and the like by sifting through old tomes, and you had to put in codes like the eponymous TR49. And that's basically what The Incident at Galley House is. It's a fantastic mystery, and you just just feel so clever when you're sat there. It's got a notepad that you can type into on the actual screen. Oh, but you feel so intelligent when you pick up on a little bit of information. You go, oh, fuck, yeah, all right, conservatory at 10 p.m. These two people must have been there. And it feels so good. It feels so good to do that. Or during the opening incident where someone's knocking on the door at the front door, a bottle might suddenly smash next to them and you go, great. Upstairs bedroom, I want to see what happened that same hour because someone must have knocked a bottle out of that window, that sort of thing. It's a game that's difficult to explain, and I think that's a good thing because you want to go in knowing as little as possible. It's got a generous hint system as well, one that I haven't used, but I read on a review of someone who said that they played it over the course of several days, and each time they came back to it, they wanted a bit of a hint. It's got the Monkey Island hint system of, hey, maybe check out the kitchen. And then after a while, it's like, maybe check out the kitchen at 8 p.m. And eventually it's like, do you want me to just fucking tell you? Like, it's got an escalating hint system that is really, I think it's quite generous because there's nothing worse. It's like Metroidvanias. Nothing worse than coming back to them after a few days and going, where was I? But I'm really enjoying just listening, concentrating, giving it my full attention and making notes of stuff that probably isn't even relevant, but being like, oh, this person said they arrived by car, so maybe that will come up later on.
But so this is almost, Glenn, the total opposite of what James was saying last week in his review of Black Flag, where so you can play it casually and sort of let the game, you enter a sort of flow state and just move along with it. This, you need to be super engaged with it.
Absolutely. It's a game that I made sure everyone was in bed. And I just thought, I'm only going to play this for 1 hour and I'm going to listen the hell out of this game, you know. Okay. I think it's going to take me a while because I think it's a time and a place game. You've got to be in the mood for it. It's quite slow moving. It was the same with Root Trees Are Dead.
Yeah.
And what's interesting is the people who did the beefed up version of Root Trees Are Dead that came out the other year, they're the people who have brought this new version of Type Help to life with the Instant to Galley House. So it's got people who have puzzling in their blood and they just have so much passion for it, and it's just exciting. It's an exciting game.
It reminds me of Unheard. Did you ever play that one?
Unheard, Voices of Crime. Yes, it reminds me of that. Absolutely. Yeah. So it's if you liked Unheard, this will be so up your street, more so than the other puzzling games I mentioned, like Oberon and stuff like that. But it always feels satisfying filling in a grid, filling in these identities and just having that eureka moment of, oh my God, this is, because also not only that, you have avatars of the 11 people, but they're not assigned to someone. It's like Guess Who. And eventually you go, okay, so this voice, this is this person is clearly the young, I'm hearing the voice of what is clearly the youngest female. And in those Guess Who style avatars, you then assign it to her. Or someone, a body is found and they go, well, based on his age, I'm assuming it was heart failure. So you go, right, who's the oldest? What's the oldest picture I've got here? That must be the,
sick.
Just gradually unlocking it. And it's,
I'm playing that.
Does that sound like a bit of you, James?
It sounds good. I've never really played anything like that. The only thing I can think of was a much more mainstream version of that is like LA Noir, where, you know, you were collecting evidence and trying to piece stuff together. But that sounds much more sort of like much more open and sort of more like a traditional adventure game. But I really valued LA Noir for making me think about things and play something the way I'd never really played before, by looking at emotions and faces and remembering if someone's trying to tell a lie. But no, it sounds great. I feel like the way you describe it, Glenn, it's like you're a detective who's way too deep on the case and you need to, I can imagine you in the middle of the night waking up and being like, oh my God, the woman who said she was this. It must be that.
My notepad looks insane. I'm so glad it's within the game and not a notepad that's next to me, because if anyone's stumbled across that, it will be like that bit when they go into the killer's apartment in Seven and they're like, his mind poured out into paper. I'm worried that's what it would be like.
We don't hear from you in a few weeks. We'll come
try. You know what it was?
Yeah. There's no Metacritic score for this one yet. It's freshly out from when we're recording this, but Edge magazine gave it 80. Another title gave it 90. So it's clearly gone down well with those who have played it. You can get it for 16 quid on Steam. So that's pretty decent if you want something a bit cheaper. Right. Okay. So the big question from today's show, this is where the team scheme behind our back and come up with a question for us based on what we've been talking about. And the question is this: what cheat code do you wish existed in real life? And what aspect of your life needs it? Look, you just need to do this hint system. I would love to have a cheat code that would allow me to have gone to the gym and come home without having to actually have gone to the gym. Do you know what I mean?
You want severance? Yeah, that's right. Jim Severance. There's a version of you that's only ever in the gym. And yeah, he just wants rest.
So buff.
The gym progression in GTA San Andreas, where you could kind of go like three times and come out jacked.
I want to get jacked for going three times. Three sets of squats. I'm done. Thank you very much.
Do you know what? I want the power. I think we spoke about this on the live stream. I want the power to be able to consume media as much as I want, and then but it doesn't take up any of my time, so I can consume it. Then, but it's taken up zero like time in reality. But I've spent 100 hours playing that game.
So you want to download a patch for yourself?
I can experience the whole 100 hours, but yeah, in reality, it's no time has been missed.
You want like the Matrix, time, basically?
Yeah.
I know.
Yeah, well, he says I know jujitsu. He just goes, I know jujitsu. Yeah. Yeah.
Boom.
I want infinite ammo. No, I'm just kidding.
somebody phone the authorities quick.
Yeah. I had to go through the rigmarole of replacing my car a few months ago, and I think I would like the GTA style of summoning a car where it implies the car has come from the sky. You know when you summon a car, it always starts by dropping an inch, and you go, what's happened there?
There goes the suspension.
Yeah. The suspension physics just clocks in. Yeah.
Okay, so it is now time to reveal our trivia answer for this week. Thanks again to Johnny for putting his question in the Discord channel. You can do the same. If you've got any tidbits of trivia for us, just stick them in there, and our brilliant production team will turn them into a question for us here on the podcast. We didn't do very well last week. Let's see if this week's clearer. The question is, according to its creators, by 2018, which single player offline game had 270 million plays? 270 million plays monthly. Which offline single player game? James, you've gone for Minecraft. Glenn, you've gone for Skyrim. Einel, what do we say? You said Candy Crush.
Yeah.
I think you're right.
I'm going to say...
I don't know. That is online in a little bit, though. You can ask for lives.
I'm going to say that there's probably a mobile Tetris. That's big in like parts of Asia or Africa. I'm going to say an online Tetris thing. Mm-hmm. Or offline rather, you know what I mean? An app, one for your phone. The answer is, the answer is the dinosaur game on Google Chrome. So when you don't have enough internet connection, a little platformer where the dinosaur learns left to right. And you press spacebar to jump over.
We should have thought more sort of like...
There's a lot of people with some shady internet. That's what that says.
Wow.
A lot of people with terrible internet.
I mean, Johnny, that is low.
That's one of the most demoralising facts I've ever heard. Like, I don't know why it's ruined my day, but it has.
I was thinking of the all-time great, timeless legacy games that are lovingly revisited by millions of people all over the world. No.
2018, a lot of people just had shitty internet.
Yeah. When did the dinosaur game debut? When did it release? I know very little about it.
I mean, I've got to say, do you remember the first time you accidentally stumbled across it? When you just pressed spacebar and you went, what the
fuck? Yeah. That was amazing.
It was a great moment of realization.
Yeah, a lot of those 270 million are surely accidental plays as well, you know?
They're not intentional. It's not intentionality. Yeah. To be fair, he doesn't put that in the question. He doesn't say intentionally,
does
he?
It's true.
Whereas you don't accidentally launch Skyrim.
No,
that's intentional. You know what you're doing.
you know the meme of someone like falls over in their room and accidentally puts in a DVD. It's like, look at me.
I'm 100 hours in all of a sudden. What's happened? I'm taking on a dragon.
How that happened.
the dinosaur game launched in 2014, so it did that in 4 years. Okay. That's pretty impressive.
Yeah,
doesn't change
Google's
the leaderboard
platform.
So you boys are still having a party down there in 18th and Keza McDonald is still ruling over all of us in first. Chaps, it's been a joy having you on. Glenn, lovely to have the King of the XCBs back.
Thank you.
Keep going with Button Boys. Look forward to hearing all about it again next time you're with us. And James, thank you very much for being in the continued... No, you're also an XCBeast. Thank you very much for being an XCBeast. We will see you all very soon. We will be back next Tuesday. Don't forget to get involved with messaging us on PressXPod on TikTok and Instagram. PressXPodcast is one of them. I can't remember which one's which. And go and check out the Patreon if you want more PressX in your lives. And we will see you all very soon. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Hey guys, it is Ryan. For years, Chumba's been setting the bar for online social casino fun, and it just keeps getting better. With new games released every week and daily bonuses to collect, the fun never stops. So claim your welcome bonus now at chumbacasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 21 plus.